Hi there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you, with the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Assisted in the studio today, our own Roberta Atti is in Italy. So my research assistant and person who helps us with a great deal of research, Dr. Christine Ulrich, is here in the studio with us, having brought to my attention quite a bit of information about some recent research about our own emotional makeup. Yesterday we did a program about people who are irrationally angry. And how, if you're irrationally angry, how do you deal with somebody? Now, you know, one of the reasons you want to deal with somebody who's irrationally angry is because if the kids are around, you know, let's say you're two parents and you're fighting in front of your kids, what does that do to the children? And that's a question we've had in our mind. We've never really approached that question. I mean, it seems to make sense. If children have parents who are screaming at each other, that somehow it's going to affect them. Does it affect them? Doesn't it affect them? Well, we've had a lot of theory about it, and certainly there's a lot of clinical evidence if we sit with people who've had parents who are fighting all the time. We see that they're not happy, but we don't know if the fighting all the time caused the unhappiness. Or there are different ways that parents are. Well, this recent research is very exciting. Very exciting because a clear link has been shown between the depression of parents and the inability of children to live a normal life. Terrific stuff. It begins with talking about schools. In schools, more and more children seem unable to meet the basic demands of sitting, paying attention, and controlling themselves. More and more children are placed in special ed programs, and then they are put on Ritalin at a truly alarming rate. Nobody knows why this is. Some people blame Nintendo, other people blame divorce, and some blame two career families. But the incidents, now so this we have on one hand, we have these growing distress among children. And now on the other hand, we have a growing incidence of clinical depression among adults, which is mostly parents. Parents, 20% are clinically depressed. Now that doesn't mean feel bad, that means clinically depressed. It means the real heavy stuff. Today, almost 20% of the population meet the criteria for depression, and that doesn't mean people who are temporarily feeling the blues. You know, we'll be better next week. Every fifth person down the street is depressed. So now here you've got it. You've got parents who are depressed, which are at a rising rate, and you have children who are uncontrollable. What do the two have to do with each other? Is this research accurate? Is it true? What about the parents who ignore their kids? The parents who ignore each other? Does that affect the children? See, every child therapist has known that when a child is in trouble, the assumption we've always made is that the parents are depressed. Now, the parents often feel that the child's behavior is a source of their distress. And in fact, more often, the child is really, what's really happening is they're reacting to the parent's depression. Now, how does an acting out child, a not sitting still child, how does that react, become a reaction to a depressed parent? Well, friends, listen closely, because what you may learn today may help explain some of the confusions, depressions, and neurosis that you live with inside yourself. Think back about your parents. Not bad people, your parents. You know, mostly not bad people, trying to do the best they can, but they're depressed, or they're anxious, or they're angry, all which could be forms of depression. And maybe you could be a little kinder on yourself to say, you know, I really came from a home that wasn't ideal. So we're going to take a look at you, and we're going to take a look at this concept of depression. Let's just think about it for a moment. And, you know, Christina, welcome to BAI, by the way. Nice that you're here, Christine.
Hi, Imran. Nice to be back with you.
Christine, you know, what I think of when I think about depression, I think about a parent's depression like a weight. It's like, you know, a 10-pound weight, and it's dragging down the family. And if you could, if either of you, if any of you have ever had a mother who's depressed or a father who's depressed, you feel like this kind of deadly feeling in the house. There is no energy. The energy is being sucked out by the depression. So what does a child do? If a child is part of a family, it creates the energy and over-creates the energy to compensate for the dragging down. And the child's energy becomes so excessive that they become like a ball of energy. Therefore, paying attention, controlling themselves, sitting still, any of that is impossible. So it's like they're the balance for the sinking weight of the depression of the parents very often. So very often you see depressed parents have children who are hyperactive, nervous, can't sit still. And later we're going to talk about some of the manifestations of that, you know, how that happens. The parents, you know, they often blame the child, but very often if we could treat the parent, it's almost like the parent wants to bring the child to therapy, and what we do is grab the parent for therapy. And if we fix the parent, the problem with the child gets better. Is that the hypothesis here?
Yeah, absolutely. We should look at both, because they're a system. A family is a system, and they're all part of the system. So if you change one part, and in this case maybe the depressed parent, you will change the whole system.
Now, there are a couple of different ways. If you think about depression itself, if a parent is depressed, the child is at risk also for depression because, you know, there's not attention being paid to children. You can't pay attention when you're depressed. It's hard to pay attention to a child when you're depressed. It's hard to give them what they need. It's hard to, difficult to feed them and put them to sleep. It's hard to deal with their defiance, their negativity, and it's almost like their defiance and their negativity is an attempt to kind of get the parent out of the depression. And so the child starts getting screwed up, and the parent, who already feels like they're very self-critical, which is part of what depression is, being self-critical, they start criticizing themselves more because their children are depressed. And now they see the children in trouble. And the children start, and they start getting calls from the children's teachers, and they feel like more of a failure. And this, my friends, kind of sets a cycle. So this is why we're trying to figure out what it is that's making this happen. But here's what they're finding. They're finding if you cure the depression, if you fix the depression, and there are a few different ways of doing it, but if you lift the depression of the parent, the symptoms of the child begin to go away. And it's now hard evidence. Now we have enough evidence that is being put out there that we can actually quantify it. We could judge it. We could see it. So this is important. Adult depression is nowadays easily treatable. Now let's think about what we do. We have adult depression, and now most people don't know they're depressed, by the way. Most adults who walk around with a long face thinking that life is too rough, they don't have much to hope for, but they think this is all part of their doing, they picked the wrong mate, but they don't know it, but they're depressed. Most parents who are depressed don't know they're depressed. They think this is just how tough life is, you see? And they think that it's even worse because their children are out of control and they don't, but they don't know they're depressed. But you see, here's what we've done. We take depressed parents and then we take anxious children and we give the medication to the children. We say, okay, give you Ritalin. We're going to now give Ritalin or antidepressants to the kids. And what they found is that if you give those very same antidepressants to the parents, the parents get better, and the children get better. So if you're going to put a drug anywhere, my friends, put it on the parents first. See if that works. Head it for the kids after that, because what are we doing to those nubile brains, you know, when we start putting these chemicals in there? Now, I think depression is highly curable without medication. Some cases, one or two cases, I've seen depression that's suicidal, or it's on the edge, and I've seen, or with cyclothymia, or a manic depressive illness. I think sometimes a person needs some medication until they can get down to dealing with their stuff. But I've seen results with medication that I would prefer people don't take. But if you're going to do anything, the thing you have to do is take care of that depression. That's what we're learning. Okay, let's see what are the references we have. After 3 months of a depressed mother's remission from depression, now that means they could either go to an effective psychotherapy, and I tell you, there are mothers who have never spoken to anybody. Sometimes just finding a listening ear, somebody who will listen to you, it'll do the job. Just finding somebody who's good, who's a good therapist, they could help you turn it around, and you could get undepressed within 3 months. Mothers respond to therapy, if it's good therapy. And if not therapy, there's always medication. There's all these SSRIs, which I can't stand. I mean, these are my last recommendation, but I've got to report the research on it. Either way, however the mother got to be undepressed, the diagnosis and symptoms of their children's anxiety, disruptive behaviors, and depressive disorders go down significantly. And this is reported by the New York State Psychiatric Institute at Columbia here and colleagues at different centers. They've all kind of noted this. Hey, treat the parents, you know, and we'll be able to spare these kids. Parental depression is among the most consistent and well-replicated risk factors for childhood anxiety and disruptive behavior disorders and for major depressive disorders. So there has been another thing we found is that if there is a depressed parent, the children's chance of getting depressed increases by about 70% over a normal crowd. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So now we thought this was good enough. We said, oh, well, there it is, the hard evidence. Finally, you know, we're going to be able to tell parents, listen, you've got to look. You know, we found something for you. You're worried about your child? We found something for you. Like, I remember a man, a man who came to me and said, how can I love my daughter the best? What could I do for my daughter? And I said, you've got to love her mother. That the best thing you could do for your daughter is to love her mother. In other words, get along with your wife, and your child will get better, rather than trying to isolate your child from your wife and trying to take care of you by yourself. Well, here's the thing that parents could do, and maybe not you as a parent, maybe you're not a parent. Maybe you chose not to be a parent, as many people do. Or maybe you're somebody who's depressed yourself. The recognition and acknowledgement of your parental depression can help you get out of your depression. In psychotherapy, there are many people who want to defend their parents. They want to demolish, my parents only did the best they could. Well, that's true. But in psychotherapy, if you recognize that what you were born into, you kind of get a little lighter on yourself. You don't beat yourself up as much. So we went a further step with this, and we did just a little further research, and we're going to ask you to call in a little later because we want to hear from you with your own memories. Get this information. This is a knockout. A knockout. Children of depressed people are more likely to develop emotional problems such as depression, anxiety, and fear than children of parents who are not depressed. Where's the thing about how they turn out, the different, I had that on the bottom page. Okay. I'll find it. Depressed parents, makes sense, tend to have increased marital conflict. Well, of course you got increased marital conflict. First of all, If you've got two people and one of them is depressed, they probably were depressed right when they got married. And if you're depressed, you tend to turn over to your mate and say, why don't you make me happy? And if your mate's not depressed, he looks over at you and he gets angry and says, why don't you perk up? I didn't think I was in here, you know, for the duration having somebody depressed. And so this kind of anger goes back and forth between them. And depressed parents, one or both, are depressed. They have this marital conflict, which the children have to see. Now the effects are, how does it affect the children? Now we want to know, how does it affect the children? How does it affect the kids to see their parents unhappy? Okay? Unhappy, but more than unhappy. Arguing. Let's deal with the arguing factor, okay? If they argue. There are two ways that people show their anger at each other. One is anger expressed in a near-violent tirade, screaming at each other, yelling at each other. You rotten, blame, back and forth. You, and then occasionally you throw the kid in there. If it weren't for you, our child wouldn't be so crazy. You know, you could throw the child and use him as a weapon. I never wanted to have her in the first place. You know, stuff like that. You throw that back and forth. They examined 267 children and their parents. 97% of the children who were studied showed a significant depression as a result of dealing with their parents' near-violent reactions. Well, that would make sense, because what would yelling, insulting, and aggression do? They would make you, remember the energy of that is tremendous, they would make you hide. You'd want to hide. You'd look for a cave. If you got parents who are screaming, you'd want to run away. And depression is a form of running away. It is a form of finding a cave to hide in. This is, by the way, if you just tuned in, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, WBAI. And had I not mentioned, we have some very new, where are they? We have some new listeners from a couple of organizations who are supporting WBAI, Uptown Motors. I want to mention them because I know that they've got this program on right now going through their garage. What a nice thing. And a few other places as well. Hey, listen. Okay, so now what happens to parents? Okay? What happens to parents when they are, what happens to children when they are in violent, insulting, aggressive places? They become depressed. Bury your head in the sand, depressed. Make up fantasies in your mind that you live in a different place. I remember one kid who said to me, I used to make up fantasies that I would go home and find out I was really had different parents. That my parents were not my real parents, but that I had real parents who were nice somewhere. So that's one. Then the second one they found is parents who engaged in a form of marital conflict that involved sadness, withdrawal, fear, and physical expression of distress, such as crying. These are the parents who were most likely, who were depressed. I mean, they were depressed, but this is the way they argued. They argued with this kind of passive withdrawal, fear, and physical expression. And they were most likely to have children with serious emotional problems. So we've got two ways of dealing with anger that are not accurate, don't work well. One is screaming, yelling, and hollering. The other is sadness, withdrawal, fear, and physical expression of distress in front of your children. That doesn't work. Now, interestingly, here's where the big news comes out. You want to say it, Christine? Because I'm bowled over by this one.
They found out that if the father is depressed, it has a huge or a bigger effect than if the mother is depressed on the child.
And especially if the father is depressed and weeping and withdrawn and sad.
Yes. And that is really interesting, because most of the research has focused on the depressed mother. And they kind of forgot about depressed fathers. And now we know what effect a depressed father might have on their children.
Of course, it makes all the sense in the world. Even though mom is the source of nurturance, seeing your father, who is supposed to be the symbol of strength in the family, crumble in an argument, or even if he's just depressed, must make you feel powerless in the world.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a strong daddy.
Yeah. It takes your protective figure away.
Yeah.
Kind of.
This is Armand DeMille with you, Dr. Christina Ulrich. So these are some of the things that we've learned about it. They find that, of course, getting angry during a discussion, while not ideal, is less harmful for children than simply tuning out. You know, and it's also less harmful if you're not screaming. You could get angry, and you could say to your parent, your mate, "I'm angry with you," but don't take it to any extreme. And here's the other thing. Wherever they showed parents who could work out problems was the highest correlation of children without emotional problems. Makes sense. So now what's come from this, my friends, this is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. What's come of this in our research is that we found out that parents' depression affects children. Parents' way of arguing when they're depressed has a great effect on children. Children will have predictable ways. Like, for example, in early childhood, you see a lot of depression and fantasy, early childhood. In adolescence, you see a tendency towards drug and alcohol abuse and a tendency towards sexual acting out in some kind of way. And then in adulthood, in final adulthood, with people who have parents who are depressed, you find a tendency to use drugs, alcohol, and sex as a way of avoiding self. And then on top of that, you find relationships that are dysfunctional. So what do you do? What do you do? Well, one of the things you do, number one, if you're a parent, is you make sure that if you're going to take care of your kids and you care about it, you know, do something about your depression. And doing something about your depression doesn't mean just making believe it's not there. You know, like part of the reason you lift your spirit is you lift your spirit for your child. Right? So that's one. Now, I'm not saying that, and I'm saying you're wrong for not doing it, because I certainly understand that when you're depressed, the last thing in the world you could think of doing is taking care of yourself or doing something to take care of yourself. It's very, very tough. So I fully understand it. What do you do if you're a mate of somebody who is depressed and you figure, well, at least I'll be there for my children? Well, you have to be very careful. Because if you're the mate of somebody who's depressed and you take care of the children start always splitting. Let's say you're a husband and you take care of the kids and mom is depressed and she's unavailable. What do you think those kids are going to be able to do when they grow up? What kind of relationships are they going to have? Because they're dependent on your relationship with your mate. So if I were a parent of a, if I were a parent and I had a mate who was depressed, I would get that mate to help. I would first try physical help. I would try to say, well, maybe it's your nutrition and maybe it's your diet. Let me take you someplace where you could take a look at what's going on inside you and see maybe we could lift you up that way. Okay, we can't lift you up that way. We'll try to help you correct what you're, if it's not there, it's in your mind, you see some psychological problems. Let's either do some psychotherapy, and if we can't afford psychotherapy, I'll get you some minor medication so that you can get out of this depression, so maybe you could go out and get some work so that we could afford some real therapy for you and then maybe be able to take care of our kids in a little better way and maybe give them a better hope of growing up. Don't you wish our parents would have done that? Right? You know, don't you wish your parents would have said, oh man, this is unfair to the kids. Well, what did they know? Their parents never got psychotherapy. Their parents never went out and tried to take care of their own depression. Their parents did it the same kind of way. In a way, for many people, to take care of themselves is to be admitting that their parents were wrong in their own child-rearing ways. So I want to hear from you. This is Armand DeMille. I want to take one of your calls at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. I want to hear from you about growing up yourself with depression around you or feeling your own depression and wishing you could do something for your children, because there is no closed doors. It's possible, my friends. It's possible. Everybody could get help. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good.
This is Tony from the Bronx.
Hello, Tony.
Yes. Everything you've just said is like really hitting the nail on the head, you know? Just amazing. I've gone through some of those things. The one thing that I remember so clearly, though, is I had gone through a divorce. And I went I was really, really very anxious, and I went to, I made an appointment to go get some therapy. I didn't know much about it. And I explained to the therapist that, how I felt. And before even listening to me and talking to me, the first thing out of her mouth was, I got some medicine for that. And I really kind of disagree with that philosophy. I think she should have heard me, spoke to me. It's like 6 years ago now, and it was a tough period, but I survived it normally, naturally.
How did you select this therapist, by the way? How did you select this doctor?
It was a recommendation to an organization. I'm not going to put it out there.
No, you don't have to, but here's what I'm saying. People must keep in mind that if they see a psychiatrist prescribes medication. In some cases, there's a couple of psychiatrists I know, Kent Robert Shaw being one of them, a couple of others, they do therapy as well. But primarily, if you go to a psychiatrist, they're going to say, here's the medication. They don't really have the tools to do anything else. So it's like, you know, it's like, oh, this is what they do. You go to them, right, and you say, here are my problems, and they say, okay, here's your pill.
Mm-hmm.
It's an automatic. So it's almost right, like they're poor guys, they're trained SEALs. It would
right,
be nice if we could teach them to have some tools. So psychologists, social workers usually are not prescribing medication, although a lot of therapists that I know feel powerless in their therapy, and they send people to psychiatrists. But, Tony, I understand what you mean. You go in there and you say, hey, I need somebody to talk to.
Right.
And the doctor says, here's a pill.
Yeah, that you know, that's why I respect what you said at the beginning. You know, that's a last resort. I'm not arguing with that. But that should be a last resort. You know, I at that moment, I needed to just have another opinion, some professional guidance. And as a result, anyway, it pushed me in other directions that were amazing, that really helped me through reading some spiritual stuff. You know, it was just amazing. And
so did you get your divorce?
Yeah, we got separated. But, you know, the one thing that you mentioned that I did do, and I'm very blessed to have done that, was that I made peace with my ex-wife after, you know, a very acrimonious separation. And as a result, what happened was this, that my daughter was a totally wonderful, loving,
mm-hmm,
normal human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
How great.
Yeah. That you said something that was amazing, that I only realized it when it was a little too late, that if you love your daughter, love the mother, you know? You want to love your kids, you love the mother.
Yeah.
I just realized that a little too late, but I do respect and love her now, and we get along great. And it's made for a tremendous transition. It made a difficult period much easier for my daughter.
Tony, you know, you're a model of love. I want to thank you for calling in. Thank you. Your courage has gotten at least the next generation to be a little better. Thank you.
Can I just say one thing?
Sure.
What I always remember is as a child, you know, I was very sick when I was a kid, and doctors would bring me medicine and all kinds of stuff. But the thing that I remember the most, what made me feel the most, the best ever, was when my mother or my father just stroked my hair, sat by my bedside and stroked my hair.
Yeah.
That was the best medication in the world.
Yeah, that's the old Dombra solution, we call it.
Yeah.
It certainly is. I thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure. And we got people like Tony. We're going to be taking more calls when we get back from our break. So, my friends, you know, getting through life with more knowledge and more information, that's what we're hoping for. And hoping to fight for a positive way, just making sure we can get through. We'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. I got a little music for you. When I come back, I'll be taking your calls at 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, I'm Bjorn from ABBA, and this is WBAI, listen supported non-commercial radio in New York.
You can dance.
again. Seems dead to me. Hi there, Michael.
You're there, and I'm with you.
Music. Here you go.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you.
And the beat goes on. The beat goes on. Drums keep pounding rhythm to the bridge. La-di-da-di-dee. La-di-da-di-da. Charles thing was once the rage of history has turned the page of the mini skirts, the current thing of TV popping.
Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, if you just tuned by, we're focusing our attention on your parents' depression, or if you're a parent, your depression as a parent. Because what does that mean? That means that what we're finding is finally the hard evidence is appearing that we've always thought that, you know, if you have schizophrenia, maybe you get schizophrenia. You know, if you have manic depressive, maybe you get manic depressive. That was kind of a chemical foundation. They said, well, you know, there's probably some kind of, but they couldn't prove it. But here finally comes the evidence that there is a direct relationship between parental depression and childhood acting out. And if I were in the school system, I would break the fingers of everybody who gives the kids Ritalin and say to them, no, 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 don't give the kids the Ritalin. Go back to the parents and help them out. And watch what happens to the kids. You will see them find a place that they will calm down. Because let's look at the way Ritalin works, which is interesting, Christina. The way Ritalin works is it speeds you up. Ritalin is not an anti-speed. You know, I mean, they give Ritalin to people. They give Ritalin to people who are buzzy, right? Mm-hmm. So now, if you gave Ritalin to somebody who is depressed, they would get undepressed. So they give an anti-anxiety drug. They give a drug that creates anxiety to kids who have anxiety. Almost like they're feeding it back to the parents. It's a funny thing. And the kids get stable. And then the kids get stable and the parents feel a little better, but they're still depressed. So it doesn't work. But the way it works is to say, we're going to give these children who have energy, more energy, and we're going to speed them up into some time zone where they don't even know where the planet is anymore. I know because I live around the corner from a Starbucks, and every 3 o'clock in the afternoon, if I'm passing by Starbucks, the place is jammed with kids who come out of school 12 years old, you know, 13 years old, 14 years old, 10 years old, ordering double shot lattes with, you know, because they're living on caffeine. Caffeine is the drug of choice. You know, marijuana kind of disappeared a little bit. Cocaine's a little out of, now they can't smoke. What's the drug of choice? Caffeine. Again, to control that hyperactivity. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. Roberta Atti not here today. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. 212-209-2900. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? I'm on the
good
show.
Thank you.
My name is George from New Jersey, and I was put on lithium back when I was 16. My parents, basically what happened, my father was always he's a cancer. He's very angry, like to yell a lot. I put down my mom's, and I actually didn't speak to him for several years while living under his roof. And then I felt like they really projected that on me. They gave me lithium. And it was a really rough time. Now I'm married, no kids yet, and I find myself sometimes yelling like he did, even though I hated it so much. And I've curbed it for the most part, but sometimes I still have a yelling flare-up. And, I just wondered, what you could tell me about that.
Well, are you still on lithium?
No. I took myself off in about 3 weeks.
After the first 3 weeks of taking it?
Yeah, and that was back when I was 17. I'm 30 now. So, I have never had and then I moved to New York for, like, about 7 years. I had no problems, never yelled, never had any problems. But when I came back to New Jersey, my wife and I stayed with my parents for a short time, and they would yell at me again, just like when I was a teenager. And it brought it back out of me, where I hadn't yelled for a good 10 years, and then all of a sudden I started to yell again. I was wondering if you could give me any advice.
Sure. I sat with an incredible group of people yesterday. I was sitting in for my friend James Ballin, who had a group of people. And I was sitting with this incredible, remarkable group of people who had all these insights. And they said one thing that they had was they had a complaint. And they had a complaint about a member of the group. And it was a complaint. And I said, it's somehow they become our lessons. The people who we have the most trouble with become our greatest teachers. Now, I don't mean that esoterically.
Right.
I mean real specifically, your father and mother, when you went back to live in that house, they kind of said to you, you're not done yet, George.
Right.
You thought you were okay. You're not done yet. See what this brings up in you. Now, here, George, a relatively lovely man, a man who fought to find his own freedom and truth, went to find love for yourself, you found it with your wife, you have children, everything is cool, right? Yeah. Except that your intolerance is just like your father's, and you see that you've developed this strain. What that means is that you're taking the anger that you have felt as a child, and the frustration you felt as a child, and converted it into your own power by becoming your father. This is simple to fix. It's easy to fix.
How?
Well, this is one of the things where psychotherapy has a clear target. You know, you get into a therapy, you go for a short term of therapy, you say, I want to work on my anger and my outbursts towards my children, and I want to work at unveiling the stuff that's behind it, so that I could get rid of it once and for all. I don't want to learn just to meditate. I don't want to just learn to quiet myself down, right? I want to learn to cure it so that it's gone from my body. And that's what therapy does.
Yes.
You know, that's the idea of it, you know? Now, the other hand, I do want to make a mention of medication. Medication also quiets it, but
well,
it puts a blank. Well, let me finish.
Okay.
I mean, I believe in it, but I don't like it. You see, I believe that it works, but I don't like the way it works because it puts a blanket on it. It doesn't fix it. It gets no air.
It just festers under there.
Yeah. So you've got a real path, and like the program is saying, you got some kids. How many children do you have?
No, actually, I'm sorry. I don't have children. I said I was married, but I don't have kids. But sometimes
with your wife.
Yes, sometimes with your wife.
Out of nowhere,
it'll just come out, and you know, I'm like, oh my God, that's my father. And
does your wife react when you become abusive?
Well, here's the thing. I've talked to my wife at great length about this, and I've seen that. You know, the same reasons that I hated my father for doing the very same thing with my mom, and I wouldn't even speak to him for so long. You know, when I saw that so clearly, because my wife is my mirror, my reflection, it's really stopped it for the most part. It's only very rarely this is going to happen now. And I'd like to just get through with it once.
Absolutely. And how does she, but how does she deal with it when you start becoming abusive? Does she withdraw? Does she cry?
Yeah.
Does she fight you back?
Well, she usually usually will withdraw, but of late she's gotten to the point. It's almost like this is a spiritual germ or something, because she's actually picked up some of that aggressive trait as well, which was not in her nature before, and she's kind of learned to hold her own during those times. I mean, just yelling, she will actually start to raise her voice back.
All right, now I'm going to make a recommendation to you, George, that I make to certain people, but I only make to certain people and not to others, and I know a lot of people are going to disagree with it, but there is something you could do that would be interesting.
Okay.
And that is to have a pillow fight. Now, pillow fights are very powerful, because pillow fights, but there's going to be rules to pillow fights. In a rule of a pillow fight...
I have to use my left hand.
That's right.
I listen all the time.
You could only use your left hand. She could use both hands, and you
got
to put your right hand behind your back.
You
can't ward it off. And then when you do it, you make it with no words. You make sounds. You know, the sounds could be anything. Rah, 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 rah. And you do this with each other, and you do it to exhaustion. And then, now we're going to add our latest element to it. After the pillow fight, force yourself to laugh like crazy. Because our laugh research is unearthing some other amazing things. Between the two of you, if this is done on a regular basis,
yes,
you know, it becomes second to romantic love.
Thank you so much, Armand.
My pleasure, George.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900. Pillow fights, friend. Don't overlook them. Don't overlook them. We actually do that with couples sometimes. They come in, and they're so civilized with each other that we have them haul off. We have these things called bataka bats. We have them actually belt at each other with these things. Now, one would say, what good is that? You know, you're encouraging people to be violent. No, it's the people who hold back their feelings that become violent. And hitting somebody with a pillow is not going to engender death. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand. This is John. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Happy to do so, John.
I've been listening to you for quite a while, and a lot of different things hit home, but this particular subject definitely hits home with just about everything that you've said. My mother probably was very depressed as I was growing up as a child. I think my acting out was more in fantasy and creating my own little world. My father wasn't there. And now, for myself, I'm at 48 and really kind of, over the past few years, have begun to try to get a better understanding about myself. I'm taking Zoloft now, and I've been on that for a few years. But I'm interested in trying to get off of it because I had dealt with my own depression. I think the first time that I was going to start working on it, the therapist had said that I was, it was something that just basically scared me. So I did not pursue it any further.
And the therapist, again, was the person prescribing the medication?
No, this wasn't until later. This was probably, the medication that I started taking wasn't until, late 90s.
I see. You know, the medication has become so sophisticated that what happens now with people is they get a chance to observe what happens if they cut down the amount of the medication. But it's very hard to do that in your own.
I want to come off of the medication, but the medication has helped because for me,
absolutely,
the depression was really bad. Every single day it was just constant. I had two episodes of being hospitalized. The second one, I eventually took the medication and stayed on it, but struggled with it in the beginning, but the depression lifted. But now I feel better, but on one hand, I don't want to attribute it to the medication entirely. You know, I want to feel like there has been some things that I have been accomplishing. I'm in therapy now. But that's not necessarily related to the depression. In part of creating my own fantasy world, acting out, sexually pornographic stuff, you know, that's what I'm dealing with now.
There's the part that the Zoloft treats, as well as the depression. It treats that kind of compulsive disorder.
And it has helped.
You know, and it kind of, well, when you say helped, it's helped you control the depressive disorder, the compulsive disorder. That's kind of come down a little bit. But you can. You could do this slowly. You could do it. And there are psychiatrists who I know who work at gradually reducing, even if they reduce it by a millimeter, they take it down and down and down, and they deal with what happens as you take it down. Because I really think that it is possible, but, you know, it's just you need somebody who's really sophisticated enough to understand the medication and the emotional reactions when you're going through it. And they need to really understand it, not just send you to the doctor for meds. But it sounds, John, like you've had a really rough history, and you were doomed to die.
That's what I thought. Yeah. My mother was a ward of the state, so she was not aware of her parents. I was sexually abused as a child, and the absence of my father, I guess later on, created a whole lot of anger, later on. A lot of that stuff now I don't really think about as much as far as having anger towards my father. I think I've forgiven myself for having the anger towards him, but I don't think I've forgiven him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I understand. And what I'm saying to you is, you're one of those people that were meant to die in the crib. You know what I mean? I mean, you come along, no dad, you come along a mom who's really, like, unavailable because she's got so much to deal with. And what nature would want to do, if you were like a fledgling or if you were like a little animal in the jungle, they would let you become food for the other animals. But somehow, some angel came down from somewhere, and they spread a little angel dust on you. And they said, not you, kitty. We're going to make, we're going to get you by.
Yeah, I feel like I'm surviving, but I'm not living.
Yeah, sure.
And I've always felt like that spirit part of me has always been missing. I think that's something I've always addressed when I've been in therapy, is that I don't feel any spirit. I mean, I feel better, but I'm not, you know, I'm not very sociable. I'm not married. I don't have any children. And I think I've always thought about not having children because of how I felt.
I understand. You know, John, one more thing I want to mention. Have you ever studied the Enneagram? You've heard me talk about it on the air a few times.
I've heard you talking about it. I do listen to your program all the time, but I've never studied.
Well, if you call my office, they'll give you, I know you're going to ask for the name again. It's called the Wisdom of the Enneagram. Just look that up on Amazon, you know, the Wisdom of the Enneagram.
Okay.
Get that book and look at the number 5. And you're going to find, John, it's like it's going to open your mind up. Now, this is not cure. This is understanding.
And that's what I've been trying. I think that's what I've been always trying to do.
Yeah.
It's to understand. Your program has been a godsend to be able to listen to it on a daily basis.
Yeah, I understand. And I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank WBAI for keeping it available. And now, you know, available on the Internet. If you miss a program or if there are programs you didn't hear, you can go back and listen to them anytime.
Absolutely. I've been a supporter for several years.
Thank you so much for calling, John.
Thank you very much, Omar.
Sure. 212-209-2900. One more call we'll be able to do. Incredible people. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi, I'm actually on the air right now. I just have a question.
You are on the air right now.
Oh, is this Armand?
It is. And could you turn down your radio all the way?
That's what I'm gonna do.
Thank you. It has to be down all the way.
Oh, hi, Armand. My name is Elaine.
Hello, Elaine.
Hi. Okay, I'm divorced, and I grew up without my dad, but I always had my grandfather and my uncle as male figures. And my ex-husband blames that whole thing of me not having a dad, where he just feels that wasn't right. And he feels that right now I want my children not to have a dad. So there's, you know, a lot of strain right now.
And are you suspicious of yourself having the same kind of thing? You know, I mean, obviously your husband sounds frustrated, and
yes,
he's using some psychological tools to try to get you to give in. But let's leave out his perspective. What do you think, in your own perception, do you think that there may be some part of you that just is so angry at men that you don't want to depend on a man, and therefore you want your children to grow up just with you and not...
I grew up in a very loving atmosphere. Even though I didn't have a dad, I had my grandfather and my uncle. So it's not about that.
So it sounds like this is a classic case where you and your husband have the kind of disagreement that is going to have an impact on the children. And you see the kind of disagreement the two of you have, with him blaming you and you defending yourself, this is the stuff that we want to do something about. And this is the stuff that is very possible to take care of, even if it requires a couple's counseling. The two of you get together with a therapist and fight it out in front of a therapist. Spare the kids.
Armand, do you have an office number? I heard you mention an office number. Maybe
sure, 212-757-4488.
Thank you so much, Armand, and I hope to speak to you soon.
Right.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye. Right. And if you can't get a copy of today's program for some reason, which is available on the Internet at www.bai.org, when they stream it, and they usually do, but mostly we get it streamed. Tom Gerby, our streamer, our wonderful web person, helps get this up on there for you. But if you needed a copy of it, like if you wanted to hear the exact words repeated and you wanted to be able to play it in your car for somebody, you could call my office and we'll get you a copy of it. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more information. Special thanks again to you, Christine Ulrich, Dr. Ulrich, for being with me and helping me with the research. I mean, you weren't on the air with me, but you really did this job today. And nobody knows what it takes to get a program going. We've got 3 hours before the program. We're really working hard to get it to you.
My pleasure, Armand. And I am always happy how you are able to help people out there.
Yeah, great. Thank you. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Do send me an email, Armand at BrainLink, BrainLink.com.
Just keep on marching off to war. Electrically, they keep the baseball score. And the beat goes on. The beat goes on. And the beat goes on.